Welcome to Redmond Radio for the week of March 5th. In this episode, Microsoft releases a bevy of betas, including Windows 8 and Windows Server 8. An unexpected outage takes down Windows Azure. And Windows 7 gains on XP. All that news in a second right here on Redmond Radio. Welcome to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast of news and information for the Microsoft and IT professional. As usual, before we get started, here are the many ways to contact me. First email is mdomingo@1105media.com. That's M-D-O-M-I-N-G-O at 1105media.com. Next, Google Voice. That number is 760-536-8859. Just go ahead and call me and leave a message there if you don't get in contact with me directly, all right? And on Facebook and Twitter, my accounts are Domingo Photo. That's DOMINGOPHOTO. Also, don't forget there is a Redmond Magazine Facebook fan page, so go ahead and subscribe to that. It'll always update you on the latest developments on the pages, some new content we get every week. So check that out. Also, Doug Barney's blog posts, incredibly popular. And you can also comment there if you would like. Well, let's see what else is there. On the Domingo photo page, I basically do some links and here and there, but do check out the Twitter accounts as well. Redmond Magazine has one, MCP Magazine has one, RCP Magazine, the Redmond Channel Partner site. And those are fairly active, all right? All right, let's move on. The answer to last week's trivia question is, the first browser, World Wide Web, was later called what? And that answer was Nexus. The reason it was called Nexus was to avoid confusion between the browser itself and the term World Wide Web, which was being used at the time, synonymously as the word the Internet. All right. So this week on March 6th is Michelangelo's birthday. The Renaissance man was, well, there was a computer virus that was named after him that launches every year on the occasion of his birthday on infected DOS machines. I don't know anyone who has a old machine, like, you know, that has a virus on it that has that effect, that is affected by it. And that virus first came out in 1992, but it wasn't the first virus ever. The first known one was developed 21 years earlier, believe it or not, and that was called Creeper. Can you imagine 21 years before that? That was 1972. All right, well, Apple computers are known for being relatively low attack vectors for virus writers, but there's a time when they were targets, particularly in the era of the Apple II, which was actually a pretty popular computer. So this week's trivia question is, the first virus for that platform, what was it called, and when did it come out? Tweet your answer with the Redmond Radio hashtag this week, and you might win a free Redmond t-shirt. Tweets should be sent before the next episode makes it online. All right, there's lots of news that came out, coincidentally, during the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, so let's get on with it. First up, Microsoft took the occasion of the Mobile World Congress to release the Windows 8 and Windows Server 8 betas, as well as opening up the Windows Store for downloading. The beta releases for Windows are currently available in English, Simplified China, French, German, and Japanese. This release is called a consumer preview by Microsoft, which is a little different from the developer preview that was released a couple of weeks ago during the Build conference in September. The Windows 8 beta was announced at the conference on the day of the opening of the conference in Barcelona, and the Windows 8 Server beta was released a day after. Versions for the x64 and x86 platform were open for 32-bit and 64-bit versions. The ARM-based version of the Windows 8 beta isn't generally available because it requires some specialized hardware. One of the more interesting aspects of the Windows 8 beta is that it is touch-enabled. So that means you can have you can run it with a keyboard and a mouse, but there are also additional hardware requirements in order to make it touch-enabled. Basically, your device is monitored and needs to have multi-touch support, and that needs to be capable of supporting 5 simultaneously touch points. Microsoft also disclosed a limitation with its Snap Apps feature, which features 2 running applications running side-by-side. Basically, the device needs to have a screen resolution of at least 1366 by 768 for that feature to work. Using a Metro-style app with a smaller screen style will produce an error message. Some other cool features about this version is that there is a secure boot, which depends on the UEFI and is not broadly available yet. As well, there's BitLocker, which requires a PC with a trusted platform module, and Hyper-V, which is available in the Windows 8 client, but only on x64-bit systems capable of second-level address translation capabilities. Of course, Hyper-V for Windows 8 on ARM-based devices isn't available yet. Microsoft also released betas of Visual Studio 11 and .NET Framework 4.5, as well as VS 11 Team Foundation Server. As for the Windows Server 8 beta, many of the new improvements include GUI and PowerShell enhancements, virtual machine memory boots, security and self-updating cluster option improvements, better control over Hyper-V replica management, and improvements to dynamic access control and remote desktop services. Those features and more were described and sometimes demonstrated last week during webcast presentations by Windows Server 8 team members that are available over the internet. Interestingly, the new server management dashboards that's available is tile-based and organized by roles. The dashboard's taskbar will show icons indicating alerts, such as when there are unfinished tasks to complete. It's now possible to select multiple items and perform actions on them within the dashboard. Users can right-click on items and drill down into the details. Microsoft plans to enable its server management GUI to generate PowerShell scripts that users can grab onto to automate tasks. While that capability was the number one requested feature suggested during Microsoft's technology adoption program, when an earlier version of Windows Server 8 was being reviewed, it didn't make this beta. However, this beta will arrive with more than 2,300 PowerShell commandlets. And speaking of PowerShell, new in this beta is a GUI tool for running PowerShell. The scripting application runs in a window and features IntelliSense. There is also a new show command tool in the GUI that will provide an easy way for users to find all of the PowerShell commands. And another new feature of the GUI is Start Snippets, which stores and shows code that can be embedded in a script. Another new element that's arriving with the beta is PowerShell Web Access. Microsoft has essentially created a gateway to connect to PowerShell on a remote machine. It's optimized for remote management, and users can specify different computer credentials and authentication information. When connected, they see the familiar blue PowerShell screen. Microsoft is emphasizing remote management with Windows Server 8 via a client using remote server administration tools. The experience is designed to be similar when working with a local client or working remotely. Storage is an area where Microsoft has added many improvements in Windows Server 8. The company demonstrated a storage pool that displays as a local virtual disk drive. It takes just a few clicks to create it, and next, a role wizard can be used to create a server message block or NFS file share on that storage pool. They also demonstrate how to remove a quota restriction on a file share, which might be a task for IT to do when organizations need to quickly allocate greater storage space. Other enhancements include user primary relationships and roaming profiles, offline file caching, SMB directory listing, and encryption, self-updating clusters, Hyper-V replica improvements, and remote desktops, some new features in remote desktop services. Check this out. Microsoft unveiled a beta version of a new service that IT pros can use for scanning Windows systems for problems, and that was unveiled last week. The new Microsoft Fixit Center Pro service has gone public after being first used internally by the company. Microsoft also has a Fixit Center solution support page, which directs users to knowledge base articles containing automated fixes. That site, which offers free remediation solutions, appears not to be associated yet with this new service. Currently, there are 15 analysis packages, mostly for troubleshooting Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 issues. There are also scans to address printing problems, system performance, memory dumps, failover clustering, directory services, Dynamics AX and Dynamics Nav, Exchange Server, Link 2010, and volume licensing activation problems, among others. Fixit Center Pro has about four basic elements to it. The service can scan, identify, and resolve problems, and it will point the user to additional information, tools, and forums related to the problem. As the user uses the service, it creates work items. If wanted, those work items can be escalated into support requests to Microsoft's online support personnel, which can entail a cost for the user. Lastly, the service will keep track of those support requests per users. The service is capable of linking analysis, work items, and support requests, according to Microsoft. A scan can take up to an hour to complete. The service appears to be offered at no charge for Microsoft unless the user requests help from Microsoft support services or escalates a work item. While the new service is aimed at assisting IT professionals, Microsoft has another help service called Answer Desk aimed at consumers. Here's something we missed a little bit. Earlier in the month, or last month, Microsoft released two free tools that are designed to help IT pros troubleshoot Microsoft Outlook email clients. The tools are the Outlook Configuration Analyzer tool and the calendar checking tool for Outlook. Both tools are designed to help desk personnel proactively detect configuration problems in Outlook profiles using OCAT or finding various issues with the Outlook calendar using CalCheck. These diagnostic tools may point to fixes, but they don't automatically correct the problems. OCAT is an unsupported program. OCAT is the Outlook Configuration Analyzer tool. It's an unsupported program with a graphical user interface that runs on Windows 7, Vista, Service Pack 2, and XP SP3. It works with Microsoft Outlook 2007 or Outlook 2010, according to Microsoft's description. OCAT can be used to scan Outlook profiles online or offline, from which it generates a report file. According to Microsoft's description of Outlook profiles, a profile is saved in the Windows registry and includes details such as the user's name plus the email server where the profile is stored. It also includes information about where Outlook data, such as contacts, calendars, tasks, and messages are stored. OCAT will check for known problems in an Outlook profile and provide a link to a knowledge base article with a fix. CalCheck is a command line-based tool that only runs on Windows 7 and works with 2003, and 2007 and 2010 Outlook clients. In addition, it can be run on Microsoft Exchange Server, including Exchange 2003, 2007, and Exchange 2010. The tool can be run in server mode, in which it tries to open all mailboxes on the Exchange Server, according to a Microsoft blog. It will create a log file after checking for permissions, delegates, free and busy information, direct booking settings, and the total number of calendar items in the folder, along with a series of item level checks. Like OCAT, CalCheck does not automatically fix problems, of course. CalCheck doesn't alter the items scanned, although the users can add command switches to affect the behavior of the scan. CalCheck only works with Exchange-based calendars and doesn't check calendar problems associated with IMAP or POP3-based servers. Users of CalCheck must have the Outlook calendar installed on the same server that runs Exchange for the scan to work, according to Microsoft's description. Microsoft has partnered with Good Technology to bring encrypted email services to Windows Phone 7.5. The two companies in a release said Good Company will provide FIPS-certified 192-bit AES encryption for end-to-end mobile messaging for the Windows Phone platform to enable secured accessing of corporate data using Good for Enterprise. Scheduled for release in the second quarter of 2012, the email encryption service will arrive for those running the Mango version of Windows Phone's OS as an app in the Microsoft Marketplace. Good Technology already offers similar encryption services for Android and Apple iPads and iPhones. The partnership is poised to capture some of the enterprise market crowd, especially those businesses that have integrated multiple devices and platforms into its networks. Since it was the Mobile World Congress last week, Microsoft did make some announcements about its Windows Phone hardware. Basically, Windows Phone hardware will undergo additional support for more languages, and the goal is to expand its mobile product line into developing markets. The company plans to launch Windows Phone Marketplace in a total of 28 new countries, according to a Microsoft press release. The Marketplace recently became available in Argentina, Peru, Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines. It will open in 23 more countries, including China, in the coming week. Microsoft will also widen the range of prices for Windows Phone devices. All told, Microsoft's efforts will grow Windows Phone's potential global user base by 60%, said the press release. Additionally, Microsoft said it's making strides toward lowering Windows Phone hardware requirements for low-end devices. According to a blog post last week by Terry Myerson, corporate VP of the Windows Phone division, Windows Phone will be able to run on devices with 256 megabytes of memory and running the lower-cost Qualcomm 7X27 system on a chip processor. In an interview with Bloomberg published last week, Myerson said the relaxed hardware requirements could lower the cost of production for Windows Phone manufacturers between 30 and 40%. Two low-end phones designed for emerging markets were unveiled last week at the Mobile World Congress, the Nokia Lumia 610 and the ZTE Orbit. The Orbit reportedly runs Tango, the codename for the first of two Windows Phone updates expected this year. Reports suggest that Tango will be aimed at low-end smartphones, while the second update, codenamed Apollo, will be aimed at higher-end devices, though Microsoft has not confirmed that. Apollo is rumored to be scheduled for release in Q4. Microsoft claimed that the vast majority of apps in the Windows Phone marketplace will run on the low-cost devices, and only about 5% of the apps won't work, according to a blog post by Joe Belfiore, VP of the Windows Phone Management. For those cases, Microsoft said the incompatible apps will be flagged, so users won't download them unwittingly. Also announced was a beta of the Skype app for Windows Phone. The Skype and Microsoft announced the beta's release last week at the Mobile World Congress. And users of Windows Phone 7.5, codenamed Mango, can download the free beta directly from their smartphones, from the Windows Phone marketplace. While the beta is not feature complete, it includes basic functions such as the ability to make calls to landlines and mobile phones, as well as do Skype-to-Skype audio and video calling and group or individual IMing. The app also integrates closely with Windows Phone's tile-based Metro user interface. Users will be able to see how the app pivots around two key content areas, contacts and messages, where recent calls were made, IMs and voicemails, and how they'll be grouped together. The Skype team says it has tested the app on several Windows Phone devices, including Samsung's Focus S and Focus Flash, as well as HTC's Titan and Radar, and the Nokia line 710 and 800 smartphones. However, the team emphasized that the beta version of the app is far from perfect. So be careful, all right? On another note, Microsoft's Windows Azure Cloud Service went down last Tuesday, with the service returning to normal for most by Thursday. Microsoft released a statement that it was looking into the problem, still in the process of recovering, during the lengthy outage. The company said it was a cert issue triggered on 2/29/2012 Greenwich Mean Time, which website Data Center Knowledge speculated could be a date-related glitch with a security certificate triggered by the onset of the February 29th leap day, which occurs once every 4 years. Microsoft said the issue affected fewer than 3.8% of hosted services and that there is no impact on storage accounts. By Wednesday, Microsoft did confirm that a leap day miscalculation took down the service. And in our last item, Microsoft's Windows 7 finished February less than 8 percentage points behind Windows XP in worldwide market share, that according to Net Applications. While Windows XP still claims the top OS spot, it dropped 1.8% for the month to finish at 45.39%. The aging Microsoft OS was not able to build on its success in January, where it saw its share rise for the first time in over 2 years. Windows 7 continues to close the gap on XP as it gained 1.72% in the previous month to finish 38.12% for the overall OS market. If that trend continues, look for Windows 7 to overtake XP sometime early this summer. Windows Vista's third place position held through February, even though its shares dropped 0.12% to finish at 8.1%. It should retain that position for the near future as Apple's Mac OS X 10.6, which sits at fourth place, is trailing Vista by 5.5 points. Although only available as a developer preview until recently, Microsoft's early preview of the Windows 8 claimed 0.02% of the worldwide market. And believe it or not, that is this week's Redmond Radio podcast. If you have any questions or concerns or any comments you want to make to me during this or on this podcast, go ahead and send me a note at Domingo Photo on the Twitter account or the Facebook account, or you can even email me at mdomingo@1105media.com. All right, that is this week's podcast, so I'll see you next week right here on Redmond Radio.